can say, this is a privileged communication between me and my multiple clients here, no law enforcement allowed. At that point, if an undercover officer remained, the case, if it were later prosecuted, would likely be dismissed. In fact, there was a good example of that at Diablo Canyon. There was where the nuclear reactor protests happened, especially in the late 70s. And there were several different law enforcement agents who infiltrated. Actually, a couple of them got arrested doing civil disobedience with other activists, with the real activists. Mm-hmm. And then they went to the lawyer meetings. When that came out in court, the cases against over 300 people were dismissed mm-hmm. because the police had spied. But it was only because the police had spied on the activist and lawyer meetings. So there may be ways for groups to use that as some protection.
And that was an interview with local Santa Cruz lawyer and author of the book Beat the Heat, Katya Komisarek. For more information, visit www.lawcollective.org.
Think tank cops and undercover cops, security, surveillance, and secret service cops. Cops walk in a beat and cops driving through the street. It's a world full of cops.
Country's police doing their best.
City cops and state cops and National Guard and Bureau cops and TV cops and movie cops and uniform and plainclothes cops and riot cops and cops and cop and cops and cop and cops and cop and cops.
I'm not going to jail.
It's a world full of cops.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrobs Piers Broadsides. Tip of the hat to Skidmark Bob and Katya Komisarek for that great interview and that useful information. Hopefully you can get some similar information on some of the shows I do. So stay tuned. Today is May 25th, 2006.
I have a Bush International Terrorist t-shirt on, my favorite Führer, you might call it, and we're talking with
Patrick Heaviside.
Patrick, you said earlier, maybe a couple of years ago, you would have been upset to see this t-shirt.
Not even a couple of years ago, probably 8 months, six to eight months.
Are you a vet yourself?
Not a vet. I'm a Christian. I don't support what Bush has done or what he's doing.
But a year ago, you did.
Because I bought into the predominantly Fox News ideology that the right was right, and to be a Christian, you had to believe the Republican nonsense. And
now you've turned into a traitor, is that it?
If following the Bible is traitorism, then label me and hang me to die. But
President Bush follows the Bible, that's why he's invading Iran. Now, come on.
Well, I would have to question that. The Bible does say Jesus said judge by fruits, and look at what the people do, and I don't think it says to go and bomb, it says to turn the other cheek, and so I think...
It sounds like you changed your mind on this. What point did you change your mind?
I began to investigate, and I began to look at, was 9/11 something that the government had a hand in, or was it truly terrorists? Are there really terrorists?
And who are the terrorists?
Yeah, and it's just, the truth is, as it was said once before, the truth is out there. And it's held tightly by a media that controls everything and doesn't want the truth out. And it pays just to search. And so
who is this with you here?
This is my wife, Jody.
Hi.
Hey, Jody, what do you think of this questionable traitor that you're married to?
At first, I was upset, and I thought he was kind of crazy and wacko. And then he said, Jody, read the Bible for yourself and don't let other people tell you what it says.
Hey, that's Protestantism, man. Any good Catholic knows you got to follow the Pope.
So at first, I was reluctant, but then I decided to go ahead and take a look at it and decided that he might be right about that.
Well, thank you for stopping, and feel free to hang out. I'm going to continue haranguing the crowd here, or the lack of crowd, as it was maybe.
Thank you.
A man who just signed the petition. Your name, sir?
Mike Murrow.
Mike, you were a one-time supporter of the ACLU, but now you're not so strong on them. Why is that?
Well, I feel like they're failing to keep in touch with local issues and local politics, so why give my money to the local chapter?
Well, you can help Mike Rotkin, who's on the board of directors and is also a man backing this law that says you shall not be in a parking lot for more than 15 minutes.
Right. Yeah, so how come they're not planning on filing lawsuits here? How come they're not filing briefs? How come they're not standing up here? What is the ACLU going to do with my...
Many things to be done elsewhere in the country are pressing call. What about Guantanamo?
Sure, Guantanamo is great, but there are also local issues here, and it starts small. You start with this one issue where they can push the homeless out of the parking garage, and then where does it go from there? How do you think we got to Guantanamo? It didn't just start all of a sudden with Bush wanting to go to Guantanamo. It started with a very small...
Yeah, but do you have any friends in Saudi Arabia?
Well, I might have a few there now, but I don't have any, actually.
No. Officer, over here.
No, I think that it starts in increments, and that's how we got to Guantanamo. It was incremental, loss of civil liberties. These are public structures, and the public pays for them.
Well, the argument by the city council that supports this is the public pays for many buildings, but the buildings are closed most of the time. They're only open during certain times and for certain purposes. Parking lots and garages are only appropriately for parking cars and bicycles. Our parking lot attendants are getting poo-poo and pee-pee, homeless campers, burglaries, vandalism, assaults, women feel unsafe. Nuclear weapons. I heard the weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
No, just kidding about that. Now, here's a member who favored. No, actually, he voted against the law. The only council member who voted against the law. But I bet he'll be voting for it in the final reading, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's going to be economics. I think we should just go about and boycott the local bookstore down there that supports it. Maybe we start sending our money to Barnes & Noble because maybe they're more...
Boycott our local businesses? Why, you traitor, you. How could you say that?
I know.
The lifeblood of our city.
Or something.
And those were a few interviews from a table petitioning against the 15-minute parking garage paranoia law, which I am sorry to report passed 5-2 on Tuesday at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting, its second reading, and so will go into effect, I would imagine, June 22nd or 21st or 23rd, thereabouts. What does that mean? That means that if you enter a parking garage, a public parking garage downtown, of which there are four, these are multi-leveled structures, and they are, two of them are open to the public without any cost. The other two you have to pay to get your car in. You will be subject to a $124 fine, ticketed after being warned, and then you will be cited. I mean, you'll be cited at once you're warned, and then you'll be subject to a fine. The discussion around that law was at Santa Cruz City Council on Tuesday in the afternoon. I'm going to play some of it probably today, although we're reaching kind of complete saturation point on the parking garage paranoia law. And let me tell you, first of all, what you're listening to. This is Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. I'm concerned with local civil rights issues. I should say the incremental destruction of civil rights and civil liberties locally. And you can be a part of this discussion by giving your opinions, your thoughts, your reactions, your experiences, giving a call to 427-3772, 427-FRSC, because we are, in fact, FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we're broadcasting at 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can also jump on the pagesincolor.com chat room, and I will keep an occasional eye on that, though it looked pretty quiet last show, so who knows, maybe one of those dead rooms now. You never can tell. But it might not be if you jump on board, and hopefully the phone lines will not remain silent. I know I'm expecting a couple of guests to call in around 6:45 in about half an hour. I hope to hear from Andrea Tischler, Compassion Flower Inn, and one of the Santa Cruzans for Compassionate Marijuana Use. I probably don't have that properly. Reasonable Marijuana Use. It's the Marijuana Initiative, which passed muster, as you may have read in today's Santa Cruz Sentinel, and it got on the ballot along with the minimum wage law, in spite of the many warnings of the Downtown Association, Neil Coonerty, and the rest of those folks concerned so much about preserving our traditional way of life and making sure that our folks are happy on the plantation downtown on Pacific Avenue. So, Andrea Tischler will be on. She's going to talk about the initiative and the significance of its being on the ballot. I've been pretty skeptical about the value of this initiative in any ultimate terms, about whether it wouldn't be better to just kick a little ass at city council, have some major protests there, expose their hypocrisy, do some smoke-ins, bring the patients around, those who want to be part of it, who are medical marijuana. And this is also about this initiative. It's about recreational marijuana. It tries to make marijuana enforcement the lowest priority, and it's part of a statewide strategy to put a similar measure on the state ballot next year after next, actually, 2008. So there'll be an initiative on the ballot locally, the city. City voters will be able to vote to make this medical marijuana enforcement in private homes the lowest priority. In fact, I want to make sure I don't get the details wrong, so I think I may have to wait till Andrea comes on so she can give us the specific wording. It's similar, as I understand it, though somewhat better than Measure Z, was it, up in Oakland, which passed in 2004 and suggested that they wanted the state to decriminalize marijuana, and they wanted the city to do everything possible to urge the state to do that and prepare for that eventuality and make sure the Oakland police were not wasting our money and their time by running around after people who are adults using marijuana for recreational purposes in the privacy of their own homes. Nice idea. It's been tried for decades, and the police have not been restrained, even in places as liberal as Berkeley. In fact, police tripled their felony busts in the late 90s against the homeless on Pacific Avenue, not really because they were after marijuana, although felony busts were for small quantities of marijuana, but for the same reason they were going after marijuana on Pacific Avenue. It was to remove a social problem, as they saw it, that is to say, young people hanging out in areas that the redevelopment czars and czarinas, like our Seal Cirillo here, and perhaps Danette Shoemaker, head of Parks and Rec. Seal Cirillo is the head of the redevelopment agency in Santa Cruz. And they wanted those folks gone. So using a variety of measures, ranging from putting in change-making machines, which seem to be a useful accommodation to people who need to get change, but actually are a way of stopping people from sitting within 50 feet on either side of those machines or having a sign that says needs spare change. They use that and other measures like the friendly hosts and the light blue uniformed CSOs, community service officers, of whom Pam Bechtel, of course, is the most notorious example recently here in downtown Santa Cruz. But up in Berkeley, Chris Worthington, a city council member on the Berkeley City Council, tried to put forward a resolution essentially stopping the police from harassing people for recreational marijuana use and reminding them that it was passed by Berkeley 20 years before, in, I guess, first 1973 and then 1979, if I'm not mistaken, certainly in 79, that marijuana enforcement was the lowest priority in Berkeley. And, of course, I think they lost their fourth vote on the Berkeley City Council, and they didn't have people working on an initiative, so it didn't pass, and it's been sitting in limbo. I interviewed Worthington about 4 or 5 months ago, and that was kind of the story from him. We'll see what Andrea Tischler has to say about that. We're also hoping to have a quick talk with, maybe even a longer talk, with Pebbles Trippett, Mendocino Medical Marijuana Patients Collective. I probably got a word too many in there. She is a very articulate writer, a seasoned fighter, a feminist, legal scholar of years of with years of struggle behind her, number of years in jail, fighting for the right to use that dangerous herb, cannabis, for personal use. It's a disgrace to our society that she has been so treated, but then again, there are lots of disgraces around, and she's just the treatment of her is just one of them. But she hopefully will give a call later in the show. If not this show, she'll probably be calling in on Sunday. And I've also invited that great political figure, the hope of the left in Santa Cruz, and I speak somewhat sarcastically, Christopher Crone, former city council member and former mayor, now running for the 3rd District Board of Supervisors, to call in or come in and answer some hard questions from us hard-ass lefties as to just what exactly he is going to commit himself to, or he says he will commit himself to, in the upcoming election race. Coonerty and Boutel have also been invited, but for many listeners, they just sort of, it's either Crone or, I don't know, write in your, you know, Mickey Mouse or something. Although one of them, Roxana Quistapache, who's a longtime activist in Santa Cruz, worked for defending people from CPS, tried to hold the city council to the commitments it made, both in the to stop the expansion of the Seaside Company and to stop the criminalization of the homeless, has some good words to say about Boutel, thinking that he, though more conservative on many issues than she'd like, is better than either Coonerty or Crone. Now, my response to all this, as I've kind of mentioned to folks personally, is we need to ask questions about issues and not really who should we support, but what are the answers that each of you have to these issues? And more important, what are we going to do as citizens to mobilize around each of these issues? Because no matter who takes the $70,000 plum job, it's going to be pretty much business as usual. Police running wild, doing what they want. Deputies doing things like pulling me over, whipping out their truncheon and approaching me with threats to beat me up, as happened 4 nights ago up in Felton. Deputy Smith approached me at 11:30 after stopping me for a taillight problem. And when I had gotten out of the car and was taking a newspaper out of the back, he demanded I get back in the car. When I was too slow, he approached me on the trot with his truncheon out, threatening to hit me. I did get back in the car, and then he threatened me with a pepper spray, pulled out his pepper spray when I didn't pull out my driver's license fast enough. And some of this is actually on tape, so I may be playing this on Sunday. But the third incident of he assaulted me actually 3 times, and this is one of the sheriff's deputies. He had a partner who was watching some of this, and had no complaints about what he was doing. He'd called for backup because I was a dangerous taillight violator. And when I after the whole stop was over and I went up to ask him, you know, for more information about his sergeant, and have the sergeant come down because I wanted to file a complaint about this guy's behavior. I thought he was a little bit wacko, frankly, and really out of control. Just lacked. He wasn't being professional. He was overreacting. And he again approached me in a threatening manner, demanded I get back in my car, even though he had no cause to stop me, having already cited me, and he was supposedly on his way. And I was asking him, as one citizen to a police officer, what for some information. I don't think he's going to be brought under control by Christopher Crone or Neil Coonerty or Mr. Boutel. I really don't. And I think that's going to happen when the rest of us get together and demand it happen in one way or another. And it's a long, hard road ahead, folks. It's going to involve us becoming aware of each other's problems, aware of when we need support. It's going to be mean showing up at demonstrations and protests, making phone calls, writing letters, maybe engaging in civil disobedient activity. You know, it may mean a lot of things. Changes can come, though. It can happen. But frankly, I don't think they're likely to happen through any of these candidates. But it doesn't mean it isn't helpful to ask these candidates real questions and to demand real answers around real abuses. And that's, of course, more important than, frankly, which one of these clowns wins. That's my view. You, however, may have a different view. 427-3772 is the phone number, 427-FRSC. That's the number here. You're welcome to call in and give your thoughts, or go to pagesincolor.com. Now, I think what I'm going to do is do something I promised to do on Sunday, and I actually have sort of set up for today. I'm not able to get the clear quality what I'd hoped for, but I am going to play for you the beginning of a really amusing radio play, which I heard first when I was 10 years old, and that was years ago, in the late 50s, early 60s. It's called The Investigator, and it was a play written by a guy named Reuben Ship. I didn't know that at the time. I just learned that recently, and I ran across a bootleg copy of this radio play. It was done by the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and it was produced in 1954. The guy who wrote it was named, as I said, Reuben Ship. It's a satire of the work of the U.S. House Committee on Un-American Activities, also known as HUAC, for all you old-timers, and the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, of course, which was the McCarthy Committee, the committee headed by Senator Joseph McCarthy in the 50s, which led the Red Scare of the 50s. And it was first aired nationally in Canada on May 30th, 1954, which, by the way, is my birthday, so it seems quite appropriate. You can send your monetary offerings in, by the way. It caused considerable controversy. It was excoriated by the right wing as anti-American propaganda. Tapes were circulated. It was aired in Canada, but not in the U.S. The attempts to broadcast it on both coasts were produced objections from the American Legion and by private individuals. And there was a long-playing record made, which was sold during 54 and 55, mostly in the U.S., under the obscure Discuriosities label made by two enterprising Americans. It was described as communist propaganda by Ed Goodnight and Good Luck Sullivan himself in his newspaper column and in other publications, and it was given a positive notice, however, in the New York Times, which wondered if the satire might cause friction between the U.S. and Canada. And New Republic informed readers that a chuckling President Eisenhower had played it at a meeting of his cabinet. In Ottawa, Hugh Leonard, a conservative member of parliament, castigated the Canadian government for allowing the broadcast. The Australian Broadcasting Company requested broadcasting rights. The production was praised highly when it was aired by the BBC a year or so later. And so it was widely known by a number of audiences. I've loved it for years. I've memorized some of the dialogue. It's it's kind of a, you have to be historically interested, but with the revival of interest in the Army-McCarthy hearings, which you saw the precursor to in the recent George Clooney movie Good Night and Good Luck, I think it was called, some of that history is kind of resurfacing in the public memory. So I'm going to play a little bit of it. This is a play which imagines McCarthy in heaven and the chair of a committee which includes Torquemada, Cotton Mather, and Titus Oates, which sits in judgment on Socrates, Milton, Jefferson, and others. And it's just, it's a riot. And I'm going to play some of it now, and I probably won't have time to play it all because it's an hour long, and I'm only going to play, I'm going to be having these interviews with other people. But I will continue it later in on Sunday when I come back from 9:30 to 1, and you'll also be able to download it. You just got to go, just Google for The Investigator at, and the radio play, The Investigator radio play, and you'll get Reuben Ship's radio play. You'll be able to listen to it on the computer at home in the privacy of your own nook, wherever that may be. I also apologize because this version of it is somewhat choppy because I couldn't find a way to get the studio's computer to play it. The Winamp doesn't seem to work, and I haven't been able to get together with the techies here to really figure out how to do that, so I simply recorded it, and I'm playing a recording off a speaker. But I think it's still audible, and I'm going to leave it for your enjoyment now. The Investigator by Reuben Ships. Check it out. Reuben Ship.
Page 54, item 35, The Investigator, a new play by Reuben Ship, starring John Draney. Produced and directed by Andrew Allen, with music composed and conducted by Lucio Agostini. The concluding broadcast of Stage 54, The Investigator, by Reuben Ship.
I've got to talk to you.
Mike, my plane leaves in 30 minutes.
I'm in the lobby.
Mike, we went all over it this afternoon.
Just give me 5 minutes.
No use, Mike. I'm going through with it. I thought I'd made that pretty clear.
I met with the committee after I left you.
Oh.
They asked me to see you again.
It won't do any good. Goodbye, Mike.
Now wait, don't hang up. Look, we can't talk over the phone. Let me come up.
I'm leaving for the airport.
I'll ride out there with you.
Mike, what's the use? Oh, all right. Meet me up front.
Call off the hearings.
Too late now. Even if I wanted to. You saw the spread it got in the paper?
You can dream up an excuse. You're an expert at it. A postponement, illness, anything.
Save your breath, Mike.
You realize what will happen if you get yourself out in a limb?
I've been out there before. Way out.
Well, this time the committee won't go along with you.
I run the committee. It doesn't run me.
Do you run the party, too? One more error and they'll let you have it.
You're a smart politician, Mike, but you've guessed wrong before.
I'm not guessing. I'm warning you. I'm speaking for the party now. You're going too far.
I've heard that before.
This time it isn't just some crackpot college pinko or some lousy departmental assistant. This man is too big.
No one is too big. There's no one so high or so low as to make him immune to investigation where there's the slightest trace of evidence that his actions or beliefs are detrimental to the interests of this country.
That kind of talk.
You're not just talking, Mike. I'm going ahead with this. You can't stop me. The committee can't stop me. The whole party can't stop me. Nothing can stop me. Oh, Stuart
Yes.
I'll be with you in a moment, sir. Fasten your safety belt. Fasten your safety belt.
Your attention, please. This is Captain Jarvis, chief pilot, speaking. We have developed some trouble in one of our starboard motors, but there is no cause for alarm. I repeat, there is no cause for alarm. However, we are bucking severe headwinds and having difficulty maintaining altitude. I have decided to turn back rather than continue with one motor not functioning. We regret the delay, but arrangements are being made for you to board another plane upon landing. Thank you.
Thomas?
Yes, sir.
How long will it take to get back?
About 4 hours, sir.
Oh, that means we'll be delayed another 8. I must send a wire.
You'll have time to do that at the terminal, sir.
Oh, that'll be too late. I'll write out my message and you ask the pilot to radio it back to the terminal and ask them to send it.
I'm afraid that's impossible.
You ask the pilot?
I'm sorry, sir. It's against all regulations. No personal...
You know who I am?
Yes, sir, but no exceptions.
What is your name?
I'm Miss Davidson.
Miss Davidson? This message concerns an investigation I'm conducting. It is of the utmost urgency.
Well, I don't doubt that,
sir. You acknowledge the importance of my message, and yet you refuse to convey my message to the pilot.
It won't do any good, sir.
You realize that only one interpretation can be put upon your refusal, Miss Davidson.
I'm very sorry, sir.
It seems to me that you're deliberately obstructing an official investigation that is of vital concern to every loyal citizen of this country.
No, sir. But the regulations...
Miss Davidson, I'm aware that you won't be the first individual who has hidden behind so-called regulations and used them as a device to further interests directly opposed to those of the majority of loyal citizens of our country. Your uncooperative attitude can only cast the gravest doubts on your own loyalty, Miss Davidson.
I'm only doing my job. I'll speak to the pilot if you
will. We're on fire.
Sir, my name is Martin, Inspector Martin of the Immigration Service.
Immigration? I don't understand. Where am I?
It's quite all right, sir. You're safe now. Will you follow me, sir?
Where are we? I don't seem to remember.
You'll be all right in a moment. You had a nasty shock.
The plane. Did we crash?
Yes, you crashed.
Oh, I'm alive. I've got to send a wire.
Well, there's no need for that now, sir.
This is very important. Where's the phone I can use?
There's no phone, sir.
Oh, there must be a phone around here somewhere. What is this dump anyway? I can't see anything. It's so foggy.
The fog will lift soon.
Where are the other passengers? How many survivors were there?
There were no survivors, sir.
You mean I am the only one?
There were no survivors.
What are you talking about? Are you crazy? I'm here. I'm alive, aren't I? Come on now. I want a straight answer. No double talk. You know who I am?
Yes, sir. I know all about you.
Well, let's have it then.
It would be a lot easier for you if you figure it out for yourself.
What's your name?
Inspector Martin of the Immigration Service.
All right, Martin. You say you know all about me, then you must be aware of the importance of the work I'm engaged in. In view of this, your refusal to cooperate can only cast grave doubts on your motives. I can assure you this incident will be investigated thoroughly. Now, you'll make things a lot easier on yourself if you answer my questions in a straightforward manner. Any attempt at evasion on your part can only lead me to infer that you have something to conceal. Now then, I have been in a plane crash. I ask you where I am, how I got here, where the other passengers are, and you tell me there are no survivors, and you... Oh... I see.
Yes, and the fog has lifted, hasn't it?
But I had so much to do yet. Why me? Why? All my plans.
I know how you feel, sir. Everybody feels like that at first, but you'll snap out of it. After all, you're one of the lucky ones. You're up here. Of course, you've only got a temporary visa, but I'm sure you won't have any trouble in getting a permanent visa at the main gate.
The main gate?
Yes. Just follow me, sir, to the head gatekeeper.
Well, he
It's about time, Martin.
Sorry I'm late, sir. I was delayed at the border.
You're always delayed at the border, Martin. Why don't you tell these immigrants where they are right off, instead of beating around the bush?
Well, I found it's better to break it gently. Regulations don't permit
it. I know all about regulations. I've been gatekeeper for a long time. It's gross inefficiency. You young fellows think just because you've got civil service jobs, you can get away with anything. When I started in the immigration service, we had to keep on our toes, believe me. I don't know why I stay on this job. No efficiency, no cooperation. I ought to hand in my resignation. But I won't. I won't give some people the satisfaction.
Sir, I have an applicant here.
Oh, yes.
Here's the file, sir.
Applicant for permanent entry, 578293B021. Where is it? Oh, there you are. Welcome.
My name is...
Yes, I know who you are. It's all down here in the record. Now, if you'll just sign this...
What is this document?
Standard form, application for permanent entry. Sign right there.
There I am.
Fine. Martin will show you to your quarters.
This way, sir.
Just a minute. Why are we going this way? Isn't that the main gate over there?
Oh, you can't go through that yet.
Why not? I signed that document.
Well, that's just an application. Before you can go through the main gate, we've got to investigate you.
Investigate me?
You'll be investigated thoroughly by the Permanent Investigating Committee on Permanent Entry. I am the chairman.
And what happens if I do not get a clean bill of health from this committee of yours?
In that case, it means deportation.
Deportation? To where?
Why, down there.
I want to state at this time, most emphatically, that I refuse to submit to any investigation by any committee whose members, for all I know, may be completely unqualified to pass judgment on me.
My good sir, are you questioning the integrity of my committee?
I make no allegations. I'm making a statement on policy.
But you've got to be investigated.
I raise no objections to investigation. In fact, I welcome an investigation. My record is clean. I'm perfectly willing to subject that record to the scrutiny of any competent body. Before I do so, however, I must be satisfied as to the competence of that body. If you will submit to me a list of the names of persons eligible to sit on this tribunal, together with a list of alternate nominees, I will inform you of my approval or disapproval in each individual case, and we can then determine the composition of the committee.
My dear sir, you can't select the committee that's going to investigate you. That's unheard of up here.
Well, it's not unheard of where I come from.
You're a newcomer. You can't just barge in here and expect to change things.
I'm aware of that, sir. I'm aware of that. I assure you that I have no wish to disrupt the work of your committee. I'm merely making this request in order to provide a safeguard which will guarantee fair play and justice. Nor am I attempting in any way to put any pressure of any kind on either you or the members of your committee. However, may I point out that your refusal to even consider it might be construed wrongly and might lead to speculation that certain members of your committee fear that their impartiality might be challenged.
May we enter?
Why, certainly.
Forgive the intrusion. My companions and I come here on a matter of grave import.
Come right in.
My name, sir, is Oates. Titus Oates, Doctor of Philosophy.
Ah, this is a rare privilege. I've read about your career with great interest, Dr. Oates.
In a certain sense, we pursued the same line of endeavor as did my companions. May I present Torquemada Mada, Inquisitor General of the Spanish Inquisition?
I am honored, sir.
I am very happy to make your acquaintance, Mr. Torquemada.
And this is another distinguished member of our profession, so to speak, Mr. Cotton Mather, formerly of Salem, Massachusetts.
I bid you welcome, sir.
Cotton Mather, well, this is a privilege.
And this gentleman is the distinguished jurist, Baron George Jeffreys.
How do you do, Judge?
Your servant, sir.
I see his lordship's name is not as familiar to you as that of Torquemada Mather. His lordship's fame would have been instantly known to you had I presented him as the hanging judge
formerly of the bloodiest sizes?
Oh, the hanging judge. Why, this is a pleasure. I should have remembered the name, Judge.
No need for apologies. So few people do.
The devil take you out, Cyberden, of your jibes. The fame of the bloodiest sizes will live long after your confounded Popish plot will have been forgotten. Miserable little sneak, informer.
You dare call me that, butcher?
My friends, I beg of you. We shall be giving our new friend a false impression.
Up here, we live in peace and brotherly love.
Oh, don't apologize. You should hear what some of my pals used to call me. Well, I'm really flattered by this visit, gentlemen. Of course, I'm not really in yet. I understand I've got to be investigated first. I'd like to ask your advice. I raised a point with the gatekeeper.
The committee has already met in executive session, and your proposal has been rejected.
Ah, you seem to know a great deal about it.
That's hardly surprising, sir. We are on the committee.
You are?
We have served on it for a considerable length of time.
I assume there won't be any obstacles to my entry?
None whatever, sir. Your permanent entry is assured.
You, constitute a majority of the committee?
Yes. However, we merely serve in an advisory capacity.
The gatekeeper makes all final decisions.
We, of course, play no small part in influencing those decisions.
The gatekeeper has never, to my knowledge, used his veto.
And you gentlemen see eye to eye on most matters?
On all matters.
Invariably.
I don't want to embarrass you, but it does seem peculiar to find Titus Oates, an enemy of popery, in complete agreement with Torquemada, the founder of the Inquisition.
Your point's well taken, sir, but up here, one's perspective changes. We rise above our differences. Say rather that we have submerged our differences in the face of a treacherous and powerful enemy.
And that enemy is?
Down there.
Ah, I see. A foreign power.
It is our high purpose to awaken the apathetic multitude to the imminent danger of an attack from within by this foreign power, which has never renounced its goal of complete domination.
We believe that purpose can best be accomplished by exposing the extent to which agents of this foreign power have infiltrated into our midst, spreading their noxious doctrine and enlisting the aid of unsuspecting dupes in a monstrous conspiracy.
But how have these subversive elements managed to enter? Who is responsible?
The gatekeeper.
The gatekeeper?
In my considered opinion, speaking as one trained in jurisprudence, the evidence is overwhelming.
And why has he been permitted to remain in his present high position of trust?
For some time now, we have been considering ways and means of exposing the gatekeeper and forcing his resignation. We've hesitated to do so until a man could be found to take his place. Your arrival at this time is most opportune.
Gentlemen, surely you don't mean...
There is no doubt you are the man.
I am honored. But I am, after all, a newcomer. Surely one of you would be better qualified. You're familiar with the local political situation. You've studied the available evidence.
One factor outweighs all other considerations. In you, we have a man who can bring to the committee's work the latest inquisitorial techniques.
Compared to you, sir, we are mere untutored novices, and we bow to your superior knowledge and experience.
Gentlemen, I cannot find the words to express my feelings of humble gratitude at the signal honor you're conferring upon me.
Then you accept. In that case, we propose...
Just a minute, Judge. Seems to me this undertaking of ours is not without certain dangers.
We can expect to rouse some disapproval and even active opposition, but nothing so serious that we cannot cope with it.
I wasn't thinking of the lower levels of the administration, Mr. Mather. I was referring to...
You are concerned about the chief.
Frankly, yes.
You need have no fears on that score. The chief never interferes.
Rest assured, sir, we will have a free hand. Provided, of course, we do not overstep legal boundaries.
Then, in all humility, I dedicate myself to the task of bringing to light the facts of this monstrous conspiracy that threatens our way of life up here. I shall pursue this objective relentlessly, disregarding all attempts at intimidation by persons in high places who may be implicated by these facts. And I shall not cease until I have fixed the blame
for 1,000 years of treason.
Let the record show that a full quorum of the committee is present. We have before us an application for permanent entry, 578293BO21. Is the applicant present?
I'm ready.
There are a number of rules governing the conduct of these hearings. It is our purpose on this committee. Sir, I was about to inform you of the rules.
Sir, I believe my point of order takes
precedence. As I understand it, the point of order is usually raised in connection with procedure.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Since I have not yet informed you of the rules, I fail to see how a point of order.
Mr. Chairman, my point of order is not raised in connection with rules of procedure. It goes much deeper than that. The competency of this committee to conduct an investigation.
Sir, you have raised
please
a point.
Please don't interrupt.
But the committee has already considered your proposal.
Mr. Chairman, I must insist that I be allowed to finish my point of order without interruption from the chair.
Oh, very well.
Today, I am prepared to bring specific charges concerning the fitness of a certain member of this committee to sit in judgment upon me or any applicant.
That is a very serious charge.
Mr. Chairman, may I suggest you ask me against whom these charges are being preferred?
I was about to do so. Against whom are you preferring these charges?
I bring these charges, which have proven, and I have no doubt that they will be fully substantiated, in which event the member of the committee who has been found to be derelict in his duty should be removed from this committee. I think you'll agree to that, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly. Any member who's been proven to be unfit to serve on this committee will not be allowed to continue to sit upon it. But will you please state against whom you are bringing these charges?
Against the chairman of this committee, the gatekeeper.
You charge me with unfitness? That is preposterous.
Chairman.
It's ridiculous. It's completely
Mr.
out
Chairman.
Of order.
Mr.
The
Chairman.
Applicant will be seated, and the hearing in his case will proceed.
Mr. Chairman.
You are out of order.
Mr. Chairman.
You are out of order.
Mr. Chairman, I cannot accept that ruling. You stated just now, did you not, that any member of the committee who is proven to be unfit will be removed?
Yes, I did. However,
the statement carried the clear implication that charges of such a nature, in order to be proven or disproven, must first be fully heard.
Yes, in
and
the
yet,
sense
when you learn that these charges are directed against yourself, you refuse arbitrarily to even hear these charges. Now I ask you, sir, was your first statement a true statement of the position of this committee with respect to the airing of charges of unfitness in connection with any member?
And you're listening to The Investigator, a radio play from over 50 years ago, satirizing McCarthy. We're pausing, however, because we have an individual who is calling in on the phone to report a victory. Hi there, caller. Go
well,
ahead.
Not a victory yet, Robert.
You got this initiative on the ballot.
Yeah, that's a big
that's a victory.
Step forward. And
of course, we're talking to Andrea Tischler of the Compassion Flower Inn, also one of the lead honchos of Santa Cruzans for Responsible Drug Policy.
Yeah, it's a sensible marijuana.
Sensible marijuana policy,
yeah.
Right.
Just remember that we don't want to get it wrong like the Sentinel gets it wrong.
How did they get it wrong?
Well, they called it the Santa Cruz Citizens for Responsible Marijuana Policy, and we're not that.
Well, you're
certainly
not
for
irresponsible. We're
the Santa Cruz Citizens for Sensible Marijuana Policy.
Ah, right. So you're not for irresponsible marijuana. I see.
Well, no.
So this is an initiative which summarized for us again what this exactly would do, A, B, C, and D.
Okay.
If it passes in November.
Yes. The first thing is that it would make marijuana the lowest law enforcement priority in the city of Santa Cruz for private use of marijuana. Secondly, it would establish an oversight committee which would oversee the and make sure that the police were following the letter of the law and not arresting people. Would also take complaints from the citizenry for where they feel as though that they haven't been treated right in a marijuana case. And then the next thing that it would do would establish a policy for the city of Santa Cruz for taxation and regulation of cannabis once the state passes the law. And what that means is that the city clerk would send a letter to our state and federal lawmakers to encourage them to change the law to make marijuana legal. So that's what it does.
And that's pretty much it, those three provisions.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I was rather skeptical. I remember Tim Rinker, one of your local activists, circulating this petition and my shaking my head and saying, too little, too late, you're not going to get it on the ballot, nays saying and whoa saying and so forth. But there you are. How many signatures did you end up getting in terms of valid signatures? Do you know?
Over 6,000. And that was the amazing part, Robert, is that just in that short period of time, which was less than 2 months, we were able to collect 6,000 signatures. And in a time when, you remember March and April, how bad the weather was?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we still were able to collect those signatures. So
now,
people were
Mike
coming
Rodkin
out even
out
in
there,
the rain to sign our petition.
Was Councilmember Rodkin out there helping you pick up those signatures?
I didn't see him.
What about Mayor Matthews? Surely she is a supporter of marijuana, at least
we
medical.
Don't know where she stands on it.
Well, what about Ed Porter? Now, there's a great liberal. Certainly he was out there helping you out.
Yeah, we've sent letters to each of the city council members asking for their endorsement. I haven't gotten anything back
yet.
Well,
what about Christopher Crone, the Board of Supervisors candidate so well known as a great progressive? Surely he was there.
He has said that he will endorse the initiative.
But has he done so?
Well, we haven't really followed up on it. That's our responsibility.
Uh-huh.
So now we're on the ballot, and so now the next step is that we're going to reach out to our community to get endorsements. And if there's anybody that's like listening to this show tonight, including Rodkin and Mayor Matthews, we would love to have
who
them
regularly
endorse our initiative.
They regularly listen to my show. In fact, they're usually frequent callers.
Is that right?
Unless for some reason I can't quite get them because I think there's a phone problem. Yeah.
Mm.
What about the have any organizations endorsed this initiative yet?
The Green Party to date.
And actually, I mean, it was announced in the paper, I guess, in the headlines of the Sentinel today, right?
Yes, it was in the Sentinel today.
So, I mean, so people haven't known about it till today. You're presumably in a week or two you'll be lining up a few more endorsements, but again, it won't be on the ballot till November.
Keep you posted on who's endorsing the initiative.
And this will only be on the ballot for city voters, right?
Mm-hmm. This is going to be a very, very popular initiative. I say that of the two initiatives, the local initiatives that are going to be on the ballot, the controversial one is the minimum wage.
Uh-huh.
It's funny that pot wouldn't be so controversial. However, we may have people that may come out of the woodwork and object to you know, this happening. But I think that with the poll that we've recently taken in Santa Cruz, that this is going to be a big, big success, big, big winner.
Now, I've had some caustic words about spending, what was it, $9,000 on this poll?
Yeah, yeah.
And
we didn't spend that money. We received some grant money from
right.
the generous donations, mm-hmm. And the grant money came from the ACLU. And the Marijuana Policy Project, California Normal,
mm-hmm.
and a few others.
What exactly did you learn from this poll that led you to fine-tune the ordinance? How did you change it once you got
the
results?
Well, that was really the amazing thing is that we didn't expect the poll to come out as favorable to this, and this is one of the reasons why we decided to go ahead with this initiative because you know we. Don't want to lose on any issue. Well, you know, let me just look at this here. That it found that 82% of the Santa Cruz voters are opposed to criminalizing people who use marijuana. 81% believe the federal war on drugs has failed. 83% believe that by criminalizing marijuana, we are clogging our courts and wasting tax dollars and police resources on nonviolent adult marijuana offenders instead of focusing on solving murders and violent crime. So that was really, you know, that was very significant.
How many people were polled?
400.
And was it done by phone or in person?
It was a phone poll, right. And it has a plus or minus validity rate of, I think, 4.5 or something like that. So even, you know, if we get 70% to support this, that's going to be a clear mandate.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Bush thought he had a clear mandate when he had 51% of the voters, and of course,
but
those were stolen votes. But you know,
regardless of that fact, the county DA is still continuing to harass and prosecute not only marijuana users and people who possess marijuana, but also medical marijuana users. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I'm not so certain that there's many medical marijuana.
Can I say the words?
But I know that we had over 250 last year just in the city of Santa Cruz,
right,
that were cited and arrested for marijuana offenses.
What about the words Roger Minch? Do they mean anything to you?
Medical, yeah. That's
yeah,
right.
Medical.
That was that happened a couple of years ago.
That happened last year.
Mm-hmm.
Last year in the spring, into the summer. So it was a year ago that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not aware of a change of policy in Bob Lee's office.
Well,
and by the way, I'm glad you're collecting the figures on, you say there are 200 people prosecuted in this last
250.
Year? 250. And when did you get that figure?
We got that figure when the, you might recall that the Good Times came out with an article on 420. April 20th.
Uh-huh.
And that was the 420 edition about the history of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Activism in Santa Cruz, and the people at the Santa Cruz Sentinel, the Good Times, actually asked and requested the city to give the police department to give them some results, and they were able to get that.
Now, these were the number of people arrested, or the number of people actually prosecuted?
The number of people arrested.
Okay, and we're talking about, like, for under an ounce or under a pound?
We don't know. We don't know all the details on that.
Uh-huh.
But it's just too much. And this initiative is going to save the taxpayers tens of thousands of dollars when we have a budget shortfall.
Mm-hmm.
And police resources are very limited.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to save tens of thousands of dollars and make us feel safer in our homes.
Mm-hmm.
This is about private adult use of marijuana.
And the right to privacy.
Exactly. And it's going to be allowing it to us to pursue more happiness,
mm-hmm.
you know, because...
Don't try and do it in a parking garage after 15 minutes, okay?
Unfortunately, this does not include... more fortunately, this does not include the parking garages.
Don't even think about reading about marijuana for more than 15 minutes in your car, because it's now going to be illegal after June 22nd.
Mm.
That law passed city council two nights mm-hmm. ago.
And we've been seeing more of those people that usually hang out in those parking garages downtown come down and hang out in our parking lots in the evening. So
mm-hmm.
it's becoming a problem down here now, too.
Well,
you know,
maybe
I wish
line them up and shoot them. Wouldn't that be
somewhat responsible? But you know, people come and they sit there and they drink their alcohol and they get really loud and rowdy and they keep us awake at night.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I have no hesitation to call the police when that happens.
Oh, sure, criminal behavior is criminal behavior.
Exactly.
But the point is that this means even mild-mannered individuals like yourself will not be able to knit in a vehicle for more than 15 minutes, because after that you will become suspicious.
Well, I know that I've violated that also, because I've sat in the car in those parking garages for longer than 15 minutes while, you know, one of the members of my family is downtown shopping. I agree. I think that's pretty excessive. And I think that, you know, something could be changed there to still keep people from hanging out in the parking lots, but not something so extreme as like putting a time limit on it, like that 15 minutes.
Well, we're talking with Andrea Tischler of the Compassion Flower Inn, who has also put on her activist hat and been out there brainstorming and stormtrooping and just generally getting signatures for this initiative, which is officially called?
The Lowest Law Enforcement Priority Initiative for Marijuana.
To deal with the lowest kind of law enforcement that we seem to be getting, namely abuse of individuals for use of a essentially beneficent herb.
Well, I think so, personally.
Uh-huh. And you and many other doctors do too. Though I guess Marijuana Anonymous would disagree with you.
Well, I think that they deal more with the people who abuse marijuana, and I think that there is a potential for abuse also.
Sure.
But I think that 99% of the people that I know, anyway, don't abuse it. They just use it and they enjoy it. And we should feel safe in our homes when we use marijuana for that purpose.
Now, you got a lot of support from the community, and particularly in the last push to get the 6,000-plus signatures, of which you needed about 3,900. I'm still not sure. I guess they don't really tell you how many were valid. Because
they didn't tell us.
Once they cross the border, they just stop at that number that's the valid number.
Right, exactly. We needed 3,423.
423, okay.
And we turned in 6,078 signatures.
Now, what do you need now from the community? What should people be doing if they want to volunteer? How can they help out? What do you suggest?
Well, we need people to for endorsements. We need people to endorse this initiative. We want people from the community to say that they're going to endorse it. So if they call me, we can send them out an endorsement form, and they can become one of the endorsers of the initiative. And we're going to have a long list of people who endorse it.
Now, is there an email address, too, you can be reached at?
They can reach me at reservations, that's plural, uh-huh, at compassionflowerin.com.
Uh-huh.
It's a long
So that's reservations at compassionflowerin, and also your phone number,
uh-huh,
of course,
it's
is
466-0420.
466-0420 in area code 831.
Mm-hmm.
Andrea, I know you got a meeting at 7. I appreciate you calling in, and let's talk more.
Yeah. Yes, we will talk more. This is going to continue. It's going to be a very, very interesting and fun campaign.
Well, just don't offend the city council, okay?
Oh, we're not. We're not in any way. We want them to be with us, and we want also the police to see the light.
Indeed. All right. Well, thank you, Andrea.
Okay, Robert. Bye-bye. Good night.
Good night. And that was Andrea Tischler, Compassion Flower Inn. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes, Pierre's, Broadsides. I am, in fact, the robe. And you can reach me online here at pagesincolor.com, or you can call in at 831-427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I was playing before The Investigator, a radio play, which I think I'm going to continue on Sunday. And actually, I'll kind of back up a bit and play some of it at that point and then play the rest of it, which is about another 35, 40 minutes. And it gets funnier and funnier and more telling. And it's quite inspirational, at least it inspire me to do the kinds of things I'm doing today, which is babbling at you over the radio and trying to get you to do things, too. Regarding the medical marijuana, or I should say the recreational marijuana situation, I've been somewhat skeptical of this decriminalized marijuana, make it the lowest priority, actually. Tax and regulate is another way of describing it. But I'm kind of going, I was comparing with what has not happened in places like Berkeley. So I was looking around for where, you know, what's been happening with tax and regulate, and I found an interesting article in Seattle, which I'll turn to after this phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert, that was excellent. I really appreciated you playing that. That was really interesting for me to sit back and was trying to figure out even if I had the right radio show when I was listening to that. And then I realized, oh, yes, it's got to be Radio Free Santa Cruz.
It all clicked. Now, we're talking to...
Crow.
Of course. I just wanted to incriminate yourself for the FBI tapes.
Well, who gives a shit? I'm on so many FBI tapes, I can kiss my ass. Anyway, well, I'd like to let you know that I am so into advertising for Passionate Youth. What was their name?
Santa Cruzans for a Sensible Marijuana Policy.
I'm actually going to go register and vote for that.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
So, but I got their phone number, and I want to be in contact with them so we can advertise this somehow and really make it public and help at the voting booth on voting day.
Well, I think they'll be doing that. I'm, of course, as I've told them before, I'm more concerned about the people who are being prosecuted between now and voting day. And actually,
of course. And you know what? Another thing was I was a little troubled about that, you know, it's sometimes you don't realize how people's feelings about this 15-minute law is until you actually approach them and ask them. And some of the people that you think that you think would understand that this law is so invalid kind of side with it sometimes, maybe either because of out of fear or because they just see things in our community that they think if we make more laws could actually make their fears go away.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You're talking about, of course, the other thing that we've been discussing, the 15-minute parking garage paranoia law, which passed on Tuesday night.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, and basically, it's I just get surprised every so often by listening to your show and listening to people who would support some type of rule or regulation, and then, you know, you ask them a little deeply, and it's just like, yeah, it affects everyone, not just the people that you think it's going to cure the problem, you know. And it's just really surprising to sometimes hear people side with this crazy idea of some 15-minute rule or 30-minute rule for handicapped people, which is so kind and generous.
And, of course, it's a zero-minute rule for anybody who doesn't have a bicycle or a car.
Oh, exactly. Get your ass kicked quickly. So I was just a little surprised about that. But still, my support goes out for the initiative. I'm going to be out there trying to coerce people.
Now, are you going to be doing anything about this 15-minute rule in terms of are you planning any protests?
Yes, I'm going to turn into Satan, and then I'm going to wipe everybody out who thinks this law is really just.
You intend to assassinate people one after another, right?
No.
Hopefully not.
Well, what I'm planning on doing is walking around on my free time with a stopwatch and going up to every car and tell a person in it they have 15 minutes to exit their car.
Well, you'd better not do that unless you have a vehicle there, or you may be arrested.
All right, I'll pull my vehicle in there, and then I'll start walking around and tell everybody that they have to get out of their fucking car in 15 minutes, or I'm going to call the cops on them.
Well, that's a shocking thing to do.
That's the Minute Man. That's his job.
The 15-minute
man. Just like the Minute Man are down in Mexico to make sure every fucking Mexican's not living in this country.
I see.
You know, I'm going to be the Minute Man to make sure everybody stays out of the fucking garages, or they're going to get a ticket and I'm going to call a cop.
Well, you better keep our eye on you, Crow. You never can tell where you may strike next.
You know, then if I can employ like 5 or 6 people, everybody will be so pissed that they're going to call City Hall and say, you guys are fucked up for making this law because we got idiots and wingnuts fucking telling us to get out of our cars.
Well, we already heard from Andrea Tischler that people are gathering downtown under other people in their parking lot because they're being driven away from the garages. And, of course, Andrea, I think, is concerned about...
I think we're getting driven away from every corner of the planet in Santa Cruz here. You know, I mean, it's kind of funny that, you know, these real liberal people, you know, who try to show how liberal they are by getting national attention for bullshit, are actually making laws and doing things to the homeless people that is quite the opposite. So,
now, is there any way people can join your, if you're actually serious about this program, about doing this sort of monitoring of the garages?
I've already been talking to people one-on-one. Like I say, I go down to the farmer's market and play music down there, drum or play guitar or whatever.
That's every Wednesday
Wednesday,
4 and 6?
Now we have the new farmer's market over in San Lorenzo Park starting every Saturday, June 3rd. It's going to be every Saturday, a new farmer's market there.
What time does that start?
That starts at 10 and it goes till 6. And we're going to probably work out some kind of Food Not Bombs at 5 o'clock and have a big drum session after that.
That's great. All right, well, I will then encourage people to check you out at the Saturday market, which starts, I guess, a week from Saturday.
Yes.
And then at the Wednesday market in the parking lot, which we should say we did have a minor victory, or maybe it's more than a minor victory.
Well, you know all the
we were able to exclude all the parking lots except one from this 15-minute fascism deal.
Yeah.
And that, of course, is the lot that homeless people actually
exactly.
do use. The one
isn't
is
that sweet?
Parking lot number 9 across from Elm Street. But
I can't be partial. I'm just going to have to go over there and tell all those homeless people they have to get out. In 15 minutes.
Actually,
unfortunately,
they've already been told. In fact, people have been private cops have been harassing people in the security as security guards in the parking lot across from the Cafe Benny, right next to the Atlantis Fantasy World. And they've also already cleared people out of the Elm Street lot. Even though this law, I want to clarify for people, does not go into effect until about June 22nd, a month after the second ring. You can still read a book until June 22nd. After that, take your book and get out of your vehicle and get moving. Go to a store.
Yeah,
and
spend you better some get money. Out of there because Minuteman's coming up right behind you.
The Minuteman is coming.
15 minutes to get the hell out of your car.
So contact Minuteman Crow at the farmer's market in the afternoon on Wednesday.
Farmer's market on Saturday.
On Saturday at San Lorenzo.
San Lorenzo Park. It's going to
Thank
be great
you,
for all family.
All right.
All right, man. I'll talk to you in a little bit.
You take care.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines open, 427-3772. And, let's take a phone call. That's a good idea. It's free radio, and you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi.
What's your name, caller?
My name's Ian, and I live in Bixby, Arizona. I'm not real comfortable about being on the air. We sent you an email, and I was trying to get a hold of you.
I mean, us being, this radio show or the actual radio, the radio station?
I was trying to get a hold of Robert North.
That's me. I'm here.
Okay.
Now, if you prefer to talk to me off air, I can give you a number to call, or if you're welcome to give a report publicly if you feel okay doing that.
Sure. I'll give a report publicly, and if you'd like to give me that number to call, too, that'd be great.
Sure, I'll do that. And for everybody else out there, it's also available. The number is, got a pencil there, Ian?
Mm-hmm.
It's 831-423.
Oh, hang on. It's not writing.
Okay. Take your time.
Do you have a pen? Anyway, I'll keep talking because I know you're on the air.
Sure, and you know I'll give you the number before the end of the conversation.
Okay.
So, Ian, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Bisbee, Arizona, and the reason I'm calling, I was homeless in Santa Cruz a couple of years ago, and became familiar with their policies and procedures towards the homeless.
Okay, you're breaking up a little bit there. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. What?
A little hard to hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I don't get real great reception where I'm at right now. I'll go outside.
No problem. Where in Arizona are you calling from?
Bisbee.
Yep. And you say you were in Santa Cruz a couple years ago.
And I became familiar with their policies and procedures towards the homeless. I was homeless there. And I'm familiar with a program called the Downtown Host.
Oh, yeah, the downtown pests, as we call them.
Yeah, and I'm trying to get information about them because they're proposing here to start an ambassadors club, which would be the same thing. And I do a free coffee thing in the park here.
Sort of a Food Not Bombs type thing?
Food Not Bombs type thing, actually. It's called Cafe Anarchista. And I do it here in the park. And there's a museum in the middle of the park here, and we've run into some problems with the director there because she's got problems. She wants to be the Donald Trump of Bisbee. And so I've run into problems with her, and so I was trying to get information on the downtown hosts, and I visited the Six for Homeless United in Friendship and Freedom, and I found a lot of information there. I found... In fact, between there and the Santa Cruz City site and various other sites, the Santa Cruz Sentinel, I found hundreds of articles on their policy of targeting the homeless and the poor.
Now, wait a minute. Now, hang on, Ian. This is a group of people who are only concerned with courteous behavior toward tourists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what they're saying here, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that's the claim. You know, it's interesting. You're in Arizona, and so is Keith McHenry, one of the co-founders of Food Not Bombs. You probably know about that.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a hold of him, actually. I have some people here who know him who are helping me.
I guess he's in Tucson, I believe. I'm not sure. And so how far is Bisbee from Tucson?
90 miles.
Not that far, an hour and a half. There's also more information for those that are interested, and for you too, Ian, on IndyBay.org.
I found some information there, too.
/Santa Cruz.
What I was looking for was more specific history on how they were started and what their claims were when they started.
Well, the interesting, I can kind of give you a little bit of recollection on that. Although my memory is not always the best, there's some people around here probably the better memory than I do. I know Becky Johnson, who was once the producer of this show and is a longtime homeless activist. And maybe, who knows, maybe she'll be listening in and be able to help you out there. Maybe we can put you through to her. The hosts were begun as a way of sort of supposedly cooling off the situation after the initial passage of the infamous downtown ordinances in 1994. The laws that set up forbidden zones all over the sidewalks, making it largely, well, at that time, made it completely illegal to sit down. People sat down anyway in a Food Not Bombs meal. There were mass arrests. The police beat one man, broke his ribs, caused a woman to miscarry. Courts, in a very unusual move, a local courts overturned the sitting ban as unconstitutional, at which point Kennedy and Rotkin's still on the council, and Matthews, who's still on the council, Kennedy is not, went back to the drawing board. First, they appealed the decision, and I think they lost or they gave up their appeal. Then they also went back and rewrote the law, which established, and it's now been expanded, that establishes a very large proportion of the sidewalk is illegal to sit down on. And that's one of the downtown ordinances. Others now involve making it illegal to hacky sack, to blow bubbles unless you're a professional bubble blower.
No bubbles, no balls, no juggling.
Right.
I'm familiar.
You're actually allowed to juggle because the jugglers threatened to protest in 2003, and Rotkin, in a panic, held an emergency session and passed a law exempting the jugglers.
I think I was there before 2003.
Right. So, yeah, so. In 2002 it was made illegal to juggle. And so, you know, it's of course, there's been no attempt to modify these laws. In fact, they've gotten worse. I don't know if you've been listening to the show, but we've just been talking about the passage 2 days ago of what I call the parking garage paranoia law, which makes it illegal to walk into a parking garage here, the ones that are publicly owned. There are four of them, multi-level garages downtown, unless you have a vehicle, unless you're parking your vehicle. And you can only do that for 15 minutes, even if you do have a vehicle. So it's another move them grubby homeless types along under the, you know, the illusion that this is, or the pretext that this is a public safety law. So, but actually the origin of this law was it was done as a sort of a let's mellow out or let's add some friendly, it was folks downtown. Of course, it really was a merchant, you know, para police assistance group that they don't have to train or pay to or arm, that's sort of the eyes and ears, the snitches for the police force.
So they're a volunteer businessmen's organization.
Well, they are paid. They're paid, I think, a minimum wage. They wear little purple uniforms. I think they're purple. They walk around, and what they do is they tell people, you can't sit here, you can't sit within 14 feet of a building. You can't have a political table within 10 feet of a building.
You can't lay down on a blanket on the sidewalk.
You can't lay down anywhere on or off a blanket on the sidewalk, at least not in the downtown area. The whole series of anti-homeless laws, and they're run by a group called the Downtown Management Corporation, which is a sort of a semi-public group which includes merchants. It also, I think, the Mayor Matthews sits on it. And it's funded in part by donations from the city, and I believe in part by donations from Merchant Association.
I see. And well, here the city is unwilling to some of the city council members and the mayor, some of them are unwilling to do something about it. Some of them are opposed to it, and all of them say that it's not a city plan, it's not, the city's not involved, the city's not going to directly oppose them though. You know, they're not going to directly oppose them no matter how they might feel about, you know, it being a bad idea.
Well, I think
because
there has
it's
to
not
be,
their business.
There has to be some kind of, I think it required affirmative action. The program we have was done under Mayor Catherine Byers, who at that time presented herself as the most pro-homeless of all the council members. And indeed, for a time, she did have a lot of those pro-homeless votes until she actually came into power in 1999 when she got a council majority. Then she became anti-homeless. And she fought the changes in the sleeping ban law, and she defeated the change in the sleeping ban law that we thought, you know, we'd gotten ready to, well, some of us thought we'd gotten ready to roll through because she had suddenly got a majority on the council with council members Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice elected in 1998. I say that not because you know who they are, but other people listening locally do.
Yeah.
In fact, one of them is running for supervisors here, and the kind of one step up, and the salary is, I guess, 30 times as much. Well, no, it's not 30 times as much, but a significant amount more, 3 times as much, 4 times as much. So I don't know. The thing to do, I guess, for you is to find out just what, you know, if this is a private program, it probably requires some public authorization if it has any similar, real similarity with the hosts here. It probably,
oh, it has real similarity.
And it probably
their
requires
goals are to...
Requires a vote with the city council, you know, I think. Unless Arizona law is very different, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. Anything else happening in Bisbee that, I mean, have you been hassled by the police, you say, as part of this, it's a feeding program you do in the park, or?
Well, there was a Ward 1 meeting on Saturday dealing with the historic downtown district, and it was completely to discuss increased police activity in the downtown area. And
increased police activity around what kinds of crimes?
Mainly geared towards drugs and vandalism and so on and so forth. However, in all the news articles about the Ambassadors Club, the equivalent of the downtown host, they're talking about vagrants and loiterers and panhandlers, and there are references that let you know that it's specifically about the Coffee Project, and it's the people who proposed it are the people who've had the most trouble with what I'm doing, the people who have, the people who they've geared the program towards are the people that, you know, that come for coffee, the people that they have,
tell us about the Coffee Project.
Well, it's actually a 10-year-old project that started in Eugene. And some friends of mine proposed to me back in September that we started up here. And I said, that sounds like a good idea. I'd been to the one in Eugene, and I knew what it was about. And so we started it up here, and we, you know, it was slow at first, and then we were encouraging people to come, to bring music. And, you know, ideally what I'd like to see and what we've started on back at the beginning of April is once a week having potlucks. And, you know, there's not a lot of food resources here. So
how big is Bisbee?
About 6,000 people.
And how many folks are without shelter each night?
Hard to say. I don't get to them all.
A dozen, 100, 5?
Oh, at least a dozen.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a dangerous, you know, with 12 apostles, they were able to, you know, overthrow the Roman Empire. So you got to watch out for these dozen people. I mean, you know, they're probably a serious criminal threat, right?
Yeah, Yeah, probably to the way that, you know, people look at it. Yeah,
how long has the coffee project been? How long have you been tanking up these coffee junkies with coffee?
Oh, for 8 months now, every day.
Every day. And so and so these 12 people have been terrorizing the museum and the neighborhood every day because of your coffee?
Well, they don't all make it, but there's, you know, what we've got is we've got working poor that are coming because it's a poor town. You know, a lot of us are poor. And we've got working poor. We've got the homeless who hang out in the parks. They all come. And, but, you know, it's a wide variety of people that come. And,
how close are you to the border?
10 miles.
And what percentage of the population is Spanish-speaking in Bisbee, and what percentage of your coffee project consumers are Spanish-speaking?
That depends on how close you are to the border. Here in Old Bisbee, the historic district, it's not a real high percentage. I'd say about 10%.
Uh-huh. You're kind of a honky community?
Yeah, it's an artist community.
So the artists control the city council?
No.
So it's not really an artist community. Who controls the city council?
Oh, let's see. We got a mayor who's a substitute teacher. We got and he's an intelligent man. I went and talked with him yesterday. I have a decent feeling about him. I don't totally trust him though.
You don't trust the mayor? And what's wrong with you? If you can't trust your mayor, who can you trust?
And, we got a councilman who's a mechanic, and a councilman who's an engineer, and a councilwoman who owns a shop on Main Street.
So you got a five-person council? Or?
Five or six. I'm not real clear on it. I've been to a couple of their meetings now, and I've been to their Ward 1 meeting.
Have the newspaper editorialized in favor of or against the coffee project?
Nothing.
Nothing about it. Now, have the police been giving you? Have the police been showing up and kind of casing the coffee project?
For a little while, they were.
Have you been told you're violating health rules and regulations? That was how they went after Food Not Bombs.
We had that battle in the beginning.
And what happened with that battle?
A few of us had agreed that we would stand up and tell the health inspector if he came back that we were having a picnic. And once a few of us did that, 15 of us stood up and said, "We're having a picnic."
In California, there's a law that says you can only have to serve food out of a kitchen with a food facility permit, which is a real pain in the ass.
They ran the same thing by us.
Unless you do it, if you do it more than 3 times in 90 days. Now, we, of course, have ignored that, and we continue to serve food, or I don't do it, but now, used to do it with Food Not Bombs, and Food Not Bombs still does it here. I think it's 3 days a week. Maybe they'll do it 4 days a week with the opening of the Saturday market here in Santa Cruz. Caller just said that. But you serve once a week. How long does your serving take? When does it happen?
Sunday nights at 7. And I usually clear out before 10.
It's once a week, not once a day.
No, the coffee's once a day. The potluck's once a week.
I see. So what time does the coffee come up?
10 to 11 in the morning.
And same place for both of them?
Yeah, we used to be over at the museum park, but we've moved across the street to a different park.
Food Not Bombs, of course, is a decentralized organization, but I would encourage you to start a chapter of Food Not Bombs, although, you know, you can use your own name, whatever you want, but I know that, and actually Food Not Bombs is just a label. Everybody, there's no central organization, as I said, but there is a, frankly, a proud tradition of resisting bureaucratic fascism, that is to say, the use of police power to suppress poor people, to suppress democratic process and needs of people and so forth.
Yeah.
You know,
suppress
and so.
Suppress the poor and the homeless.
But, I mean, of course, doing it, we had a group here called SWAP, Soup Without a Permit. I was arrested repeatedly for serving free food back in 1988, 1989. and I was never convicted. Some were, but we were able eventually to establish a free feeding program because of our arrests. So it does have, it can have in some communities a beneficial effect. You know,
yeah.
I mean, so.
You know, what bothers me is we don't get recognition for the things that we do do. Or we don't get, you know, on Christmas Day, we brought in a truckload of free stuff. We went around the community and gathered up all this free stuff, brought it in, put it in the park, and called it a free yard sale. Made a big sign that said, we would turn your free, we will turn your unsightly cash into free mulch.
And, of course, they gave you a ticket for trashing the park.
No, nothing.
Well, that's better than a ticket.
Nothing. No recognition either.
Well, the glory, you won't get glory from the authorities. You won't get recognition from the papers. You know, two generations down the road, they will remember you. But that's about it. You know, now what you get is the satisfaction of knowing you're getting stuff out to people who need it. That's probably about all you're going to get.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, you'll get a pat on the back from Free Radio Santa Cruz, at least for me here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. Do you have a free radio station in the area, by the way?
We have KBRP. It's a community radio station. It's a real liberal radio station.
Do they support you?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
well,
they're working together with me.
Oh, that's great. I mean, we had a lot of trouble getting support from radio stations. We got some sort of sympathetic statements from the vanilla public radio station KUSP and the kind of timid but occasionally supportive KZSC. But when we were doing this back in the late 80s, we didn't have a free radio Santa Cruz. And, you know, they're radio. It's like with, you know, the Bush regime. They'll say, you know, invade Iraq. Let's talk about those weapons of mass destruction, pro and con. In 2006, what's your view? You know, they don't really deal with the real issue. They present it from an extremely right-wing slant. I mean, now I don't know. I'm exaggerating because in terms of the actual radio station on that issue, but you're lucky if you have a station that supports you really in a strong advocacy way. You also want to try and find some angels, like some wealthier people there who think you're doing a good job. Mm-hmm. And they can be, you know, actually often they're people on the extreme right who, you know, they can be anti-choice people. They can be people who are, you know, one of my closest colleagues on the right of people to serve free food is a guy called Wiley Drake in Buena Park, California, who's, you know, a homophobe extraordinaire, but who will stand up to the police when they try to stop homeless people getting, you know, right to sleep in his church, for example. And they've tried. So.
You know, one thing that I've been doing is I've been attending church services with reverends I've been told are really progressive and talking to them.
That sounds good. What's the sleeping situation? Is it illegal for a person to sleep in their vehicle in Bisbee, Arizona? We're talking with Ian from Bisbee.
Not thus far. It's not illegal. A lot of things aren't illegal thus far.
So actually, Bisbee is more liberal than Santa Cruz, California, on the issue of sleeping.
But my concern is, I you know, from my experiences in Santa Cruz, I recognize the pattern of what's happening here. You know, they want to put out this Ambassadors Club. They want to have increased police presence. They're talking about a substation, which we squashed years ago, and they brought it up again. And I know what they're doing. You know, I know what they're establishing, because it's the same pattern they established in Santa Cruz. Cities have things called city planners,
mm-hmm.
and the city planners come in, and they base their city plan on city plans from other cities.
Yep. Yeah, we got our downtown ordinances from Seattle, which got them from the Manhattan think tank in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So it's true. You have to keep your eyes open. Also be aware, though, that, you know, like in Santa Cruz, we recently got two initiatives on the ballot, we being actually other groups. The minimum wage, raising the minimum wage has been put on the ballot, even though most of the city council doesn't favor it, and the making marijuana the lowest priority, even though to me it's largely meaningless, but may actually have some value, has been put on the ballot. So, you know, you might figure out, you know, how many signatures you need to get an initiative on the ballot to overturn Bisbee's, you know, bullshit if they're going to come at you with some crap. Get an attorney. Get an attorney or two to look into it, or go to the law library yourself and take a peek at what the city laws are in terms of overturning city council decisions.
Well, a couple days after this Ward 1 meeting, they arrested a man here who doesn't act. It's a dog with a cat sitting on its back with a mouse sitting on the cat. And he goes out and he does his act in the street, and he puts out a basket, but the basket has no sign on it. And the basket, he carries the mice in the basket when he's not doing his act.
So this was some, they didn't like the sexual perversion. They thought it reminded people of Abu Ghraib, something like that.
Well, he's been here for a long time. He has the support of a lot of businesses. He has the support of the whole community.
What's his name?
His name's Greg Pike.
Greg Pikes?
Uh-huh. P-I-K-E.
Uh-huh.
And what the police did shortly after this meeting was they went and arrested him.
And what they told him... Uh-huh.
When they started talking to him, they said, you can't do this here. And he said, I have permission of the store owner to do this here. And they said, you got to move. So he moved across the street, and they arrested him. But before they told him that he had to move, they told him, just leave town. You get out of here. Leave town. That's a tactic I've never heard them use before.
And how do you know he said this? This is by his account or by your? You heard it?
By his account and the account of the witnesses who were there.
Okay, now, is he out of jail now?
Oh, he's out of jail. He was front page news today.
Wow, and has he got a lawyer for a countersuit going here?
He's got a lawyer, and he's going to countersue. It happens that this particular man was on a national morning news program a few years back, and he's already contacted them. And I think this is a really lucky break.
Now, what you need to do is get close to him and document what the police may be trying to do to, you know, the Coffee Project, and maybe contact the same show, although, of course, you haven't got the news push of a dog, cat, rat show, but still, you know, I mean... We've been talking with Ian from Bisbee. Ian, let me give you my phone number so you can reach me off air and I can get back to you at greater length, unless there's more you want to say specifically about any of this stuff.
No, I'd like to talk to you later when you're not there. So it's
831-423-3733. This is the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Huff, H-U-F-F, which is 4833. Again,
H-U-F-F?
Uh-huh. 423-4833.
Oh, so you work directly with Huff?
I do. We actually have meetings every Wednesday in case you want to fly out from Bisbee.
Unlikely, but I really support what you do.
And it sounds like I support what you do, too.
You know, they were one of my hero organizations when I was there in Santa Cruz. You know, they would turn out, and they were amazing people, you know?
Well, it's rare and refreshing to hear it, so keep those compliments coming, man.
So, I'm going to go, and I'll talk to you later. It's been good getting to know you.
So, Ian, is there any way people can get more information about Bisbee? Can they Google for something?
They could look for the Bisbee Observer and the Bisbee Review. It's got the whole recent history. They'd want to go back to the beginning of this month.
Okay.
And, start checking it out. It's got the whole recent history on the Ambassador Club and on the meetings and so on and so forth.
Sounds good to me.
And, you know, I'd appreciate any information. You know, that's why I'm going to call you back. I would appreciate any information you could provide to me when I have a pen and a paper and stuff to write it down.
Sure, let's do that.
All I have is a little scrap right now.
Call me back and leave a time you want me to call you and we'll get together.
Okay, great. Well, nice talking to you.
You too. Thanks,
bye.
Ian. Bye-bye. And phone lines are open. That was Ian from Bisbee, California, Arizona, about creeping gentrification, creeping policification, creeping intolerance around the Coffee Project there in that little community of 6,000, 10 miles from the border. Wow, with only 6,000 folks. You're tuned to Free Radio or freakradio.org. at 101.1 FM in Santa Cruz. And if you want to call in, the phone number is 427-3772. If you want to catch me off air, the number is 423-4833. And I was going to launch into more of the investigator or more of the Tuesday City Council meeting, but callers take precedence. Hi there, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, that was great. I've been to Bigsby before.
Oh,
and I've been to that coffee
project.
Uh-huh. Hello?
Yes.
And it is absolutely the most creative voice in that area.
It's a coffee house or a coffee project or what is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, the coffee project, yes. Okay. You know, they had a coffee house. You go in, get coffee and stuff. You know, but I caught the flyer for the coffee project.
Uh-huh.
And I was there in like 2004 or 2005.
He says it's only been going for about, I thought it was only been going for about a year, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, I caught it just before the shit hit the fan there.
Huh, okay.
But I was in Bisbee, 2004-2005, New Year's. And we had a big old New Year's party in Bisbee when I went down there, and I caught that information for them. And it's really interesting. I'm really glad you had that guy on, because it really shows what's going on around the country with this whole homeless thing that is irritating these store owners and politicians in these towns. It's unbelievable.
Well, I appreciate that, Crow. Any new update? I'm going to roll with the next before.
Yeah, go ahead and roll. I just want to comment on the whole thing that you had interviewed that guy with, the whole Bisbee thing. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
There's a big connection that keeps, you know, going around the country, so well, forth and so on. You know?
Well, I encourage people to Google for, is it Bisbee, B-I-S-B-E, or Bixby? What's the name of the
Bisbee.
B-I-S-B-E, or B-I-S-B-Y?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, we'll try and figure out what it is. And,
Bisbee, but it's a wonderful place. It's a wonderful place on the side of a mountain, you know, down in just 10 miles from Mexico. And the reason why there's not a lot of Mexican people is because they keep it that way. Yep, you're right, Robert.
Yes. They're white and they're right.
Yep.
They,
it's pretty much that. And then you have a couple token Mexicans there running the sheriff's department and stuff. It's just it's a joke.
Thanks, Crow.
All right, buddy. Talk to you in a bit. Bye.
Bye-bye. I'm going to play a little bit of tape. As I said, I thought to play a little bit from the city council meeting, but it's not really enough time, so I'm going to play a few interviews, and we'll go into those and roll out with those. And, of course, we can also take your calls, 427-3772, we being me and anybody else who may come wandering into the studio. But right now I'm alone, so let's see it. If you want to give a call, you can, and we will talk with you. I will, that is, 427-3772.
It's May, May 8th. Excuse me, sir, are you one of the criminals involved in this incident?
Yes!
And you, sir, are you also a criminal here? You remain silent. Perhaps not
I speak the fifth. I have a right to remain silent, and I'm shutting the fuck up.
All right, we have a bicycle here on the sidewalk, which is overturned. And
no,
give me your money.
Yeah,
you've just been approached by two hosts after hacky-sacking at the, I guess, Laurel and Pacific Benicia parking space. Were you told not to hacky-sack?
No, they didn't say nothing.
But they just asked somebody to move his... Yes, sir.
And then they asked him to move his stuff.
Right. Can I go to Colorado to dig a shitter? Fuck this town. I'm gone. I want to go back to family. We're
whatever
going to
you
the
do,
woods.
Whatever you do, do it with gentility and grace. Are you one of the hacky sack criminals here?
You're beautiful.
I'm a criminal. I kick a hacky sack around and get prosecuted for it.
I notice you also have various tattoos on your body, a looks like a mohawk haircut, and dark glasses. Do you have anything else to confess to?
I had a Twinkie for breakfast.
Oh, well, that's not good for you, you know.
I didn't have enough change, though. You know, it sits in your stomach for like 7 years.
Well, it's a seven-year bitch, so to speak.
That's right, seven-year bitch.
So have you been hassled by these hosts for hacky-sacking on the sidewalk or not?
Juggling. We can't juggle on the sidewalk. We're not allowed to hacky-sack on the sidewalk.
You mean they told you you couldn't juggle?
Well, when I was here last, yeah, definitely.
How long ago was that?
3 years ago.
Because they actually have changed the juggle law. You can juggle, but you can't hacky-sack. We like to get our sports correct.
Oh, shit, sorry. I'll be sure to remember that
one. I don't
want
to hear any more misinterpretation.
So we can juggle, we can't hacky-sack.
You can. There was actually a special counsel change in 2003 in the summer because jugglers all threatened to come to town and start juggling. That unnerved the city council.
Beautiful. I love that. That's beautiful. I'm going to go juggle right now.
All right. Well, juggle on. That's what I said.
But don't kick you with the feet because that's wrong.
No.
Right?
Feet, no. Hands, yes.
Okay. So when the balls land in the children's mouth and choke them, it better be from the hands, not the feet.
As they say of Ed Porter, the man who passed these laws, Santa Cruz, the town that has no balls.
That's true. The locals, anyway.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
We've been talking with
Vanessa.
And what's your name?
I'm Chris.
And Chris, were you given any instructions by the two female hosts, sir?
No, sir.
Well, we can't. He was hacky-sacky, too.
Oh, ho, another criminal. I'm making a note of this. Thank you.
Thank you.
So it's about 7:20. It's May 7th.
It's an amazing day.
Here on the beautiful day, here on the, actually, the pat next to the levee, standing by the stoplight here on Soquel Avenue as it crosses the river. And talking with?
My name?
Yeah.
Evangelos Alexandru.
And you have a couple of, I would call them small, kind of 8.5 by 11 signs, encouraging people to boycott. Is that?
Saturn.
The Saturn Cafe.
The reason is that they don't have a medical care, you know, for their workers. They don't have any medical, let's say, insurance for their employees.
Okay, and the other one is boycott Staff of Life.
Yeah, Staff of Life, the same thing. Is they have three or four stores throughout the county of Santa Cruz, the Staff of Life. There is another here, Lulu. Oh, my goodness.
Lulu Carpenters. That's actually, they have not let me in. For 2 years, I've been banned from Lulu's.
Well, here again, there is another example. But ask me how. Well, Lulu's is Lulu, man. I mean, they have to be at the transitional house themselves, pumping them with med, like about 15 to 36.
Let me understand. Are we talking about Lulu Carpenter's, the cafe?
Right.
Now, what relation do they have to a transitional house?
No, they don't have any relation with the transitional house. However, a lot of people from the transitional house, they somehow catered became customers for Lulu's. And then Lulu's goes and kicks them out of there. They say, hey, I can't stand your presence. You're too crazy for us. Get out. We're not going to serve you anymore. Don't ever come back here again.
These are people with mental health labels?
Right. Mental health labels, like, you know,
manic depressive, bipolar, schizophrenic,
paranoia. That's right.
Okay.
All that bad stuff.
Are you one of these creatures,
yes,
sir?
Yes, I am indeed. I'm a double polar disorder. I mean, manic depressive. If I laugh too much, I'm manic. If I dance too much, I'm manic. If I'm happy too much, I am definitely manic, and I need to take my meds. Well, I'm taking my meds.
What meds are you taking?
Yeah, excuse me?
What meds are you taking?
Oh, I'm taking a Trileptal. I'm taking I don't take lithium. I used to take lithium for almost about 10, 15 years. And, Wellbutrin is fantastic. I recommend it. Ask your health care.
Smoke marijuana, perhaps?
No, you know something? I have never tried marijuana.
Really?
And once upon a time...
That could be your big problem.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I have to start it. I'm 69. I mean, I'm 67.
You only look 66. Actually, you look pretty good-looking 66, buddy.
Let me tell you. I just haven't had sleep for about 44 hours, and I need to go back to my motel to get my 8 to 10 hours sleep. And, boy, you're going to see a whole different person. Right now, I'm tired. Mm-hmm. And you caught me by surprise that you said, hey, do you mind to really speak for the free show?
I asked you about the Santa Cruz Film Festival.
Yeah.
And you just come from the film, I guess, on immigrants, and you
right.
were praising it. But
right.
then you showed me some of these small posters you have urging a boycott of Lulu's and a boycott of the Saturn. And then there's also a boycott of the Tea House. What is the Tea House?
The Tea House is a transitional home that the people that they have gone to the hospital, let's say in Dominicans, they treat them there for 5, 10, 15 days, and then they have to go to a transitional house. Well, the first they're going to do is they're going to go to El Dorado, good El Dorado on El Dorado Street. They evaluate them, they pump their meds and so forth. They keep on hearing again, you got to get your meds, you got to get your meds, you got to get your meds. They just absolutely driving them up the wall. But anyway, they have four good programs, however, sometimes that they help the addicts, like alcohol addicts, marijuana addicts, any addiction except sex.
Yes, we won't get into that at this time. Are there actually people that are classified as marijuana addicts at this place?
Yeah. You know, you take marijuana, you have alcohol, marijuana, mixture. Oh, you are not a good citizen.
Well, I mean, you actually, are there people who would describe themselves as marijuana addicts that you know?
You know, I have heard two or three of them when I was under the treatment. I'm a marijuana addict. Like they say, I am an alcoholic. The AA, you know, meeting.
But this is sort of like, isn't this sort of the propaganda program of Marijuana Anonymous? They have this
right.
group that meets every
right.
week. And,
right.
I mean, I'm you know, an advocate of marijuana use, not of abuse, and obviously it's not
yeah.
right for some people.
Oh, well, my children, I think one of them is pretty much a marijuana addict. No, I don't know if he's addicted or not, but he tried it since he was 13, 14. He's 36 now. And
still, does it interfere with his life?
I don't think. Maybe it has. It did, unfortunately, with his beloved ex. Oh. Girlfriend, he has two kids, and it's pretty scary to see him being so blasé, you know, sitting there looking at the kids. He loves his kids. I mean, there is no one can ever doubt that my son, the oldest son, I'm not going to mention his name, loves his children. He does. He would do anything for those kids. But the problem is that he continues taking this. Let's say, what is kind of the entertainment drugs or entertainment...
Recreational drugs.
Recreational drugs.
Recreational drugs.
Recreational,
yeah. Recreational sex.
Yeah. Right. You see, I'm not from this country. I'm from the Sudan. And I never heard
pretty
about...
Pretty pale for a man from the Sudan.
Yeah, I know. It just happened to be an albino, you know.
Really? What is your native language?
My native language is Greek and Arabic because my mother is Greek. My father's an Arab.
Wow.
Woo,
are you a terrorist, sir? Would you like to turn yourself in?
Yeah, they called me all kinds of names, especially when I had my long hair and long beard up to my belly button. They thought I was a relative for Bin Laden.
Oh, yes. So you are, in fact, the Bin Laden contact in Santa Cruz.
I think they thought that I was something like this, you know, because I had a nice, nice black hair, beard, and... one side was just a string, they call it, you know, white. So in the midst of all this black hair, there was a, like,
the beard that was.
Yeah, that it was, right, that was.
Now, you originally began talking, you were critical of psychiatric medication, but then you said that some of them have helped you.
Yes.
And I know that I myself have done radio shows on Robert Whittaker's mm-hmm. books. Robert Whittaker is a writer who's written about how the people who don't use, countries where they don't forcibly medicate, one of them I guess is Sudan, I'm not sure, but
yeah, the Sudan.
There are a number of countries that don't use these Western medications for so-called psychiatric ailments,
yes.
and the people recover from so-called schizophrenic episodes
yes.
more quickly.
Right.
I mean, there's still a certain proportion. There's still a period of suffering and disorientation, but people recover more naturally, more quickly, according to World Health Organization figures.
Yes.
And so he researched further, and he found that these drugs actually increase your likelihood to succumb to repeated. They actually prompts the very problems that it's supposed to solve.
And we're pausing briefly for a very brief comment from that perennial caller, Crow. Hi, Crow.
Hey, buddy.
Yes. Go ahead. You have a minute.
1 minute?
Yeah, we haven't got much time because I got 8 minutes left here.
Okay, 8 minutes left.
Mm-hmm. What you got? What's your comment? Are you there?
Yeah.
You're on the air. Looks like we lost him. Anyway, I appreciate Gro's comments, and it's good that he calls in. Let's see if we can finish up with this particular interview, and then prepare for Uncle Dennis and From the Cream to the Dregs.
Right. This stuff, you know, I got my second episode, you know. Here I am back in Dominicans. Oh, man, they have to start all over again.
I mean, what it does is it temporarily suppresses the symptoms.
Yeah.
But then in the long run, it actually increases the number of receptors.
Right.
So you get more episodes, or else it decreases the level of, I don't know. There are two, but they're...
Dazed out, these people. They're walking around and they're just... Dazed out. They don't know whether it's daytime, nighttime, dreaming, or actually...
Have you worked with PERC, Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective? Do you know about them?
No, I haven't.
Have you heard about them?
This is my first time.
Local group of local advocates who are concerned about abuses of psychiatry locally.
Yeah.
So you might be interested in getting in touch with Jane Kaiser.
Yes.
I'll give you her phone number. In fact, I'll tell her those on the air because...
I have a court thing that is going to happen. When I was... I decided to move on at the tea house, the transitional house. They kept my medication. I paid them for my month that I was there, $900 per month to eat and sleep. That's okay. But $900 is a lot of money for a person that only makes 810 and 11 cents.
My panhandling again, is that what you're... You're selling your drugs outside.
Right. And I love flowers. I go around and say, sexy flowers. Sexy flowers better than Viagra, you know. And people... But
you left the tea house.
I left the tea house.
You paid the $900 a month.
Yeah.
And then there was a problem regarding
a
court...
They did not have me take my medication with me. Okay. They said, no, we're not going to give you your medication.
They were afraid you would kill yourself, sell it, throw it in the street.
They're crazy. It's a crazy idea because, you know, they keep having you taking them. And then when it's time to go, they say, no, we're not going to give you the medication with you. Well, I just paid it. It's my medication. I paid. Why are you refusing to take something that I paid?
So you're going to court around what issue?
I'm going to court. I'm having an incredible, I'm not going to mention his name here, lawyer that is going to take a good look at the case that I have. And he says, if I have a case here, I'll take it.
So you are trying to, secure your drugs? Is that the reason you're going home?
I was trying to go back and say, hey, give me my medication.
Right. So what did they do?
And they said no.
And so what are you going to court for?
I'm going to court because for the past 3 weeks without my medication, I experienced very horrendous pain throughout my body because I didn't have these so-called painkillers.
And those painkillers are?
The name of them, well, I'm just going to keep them because they're loose in the market, and I just don't want to really name them. I would say 90% of the people that they went through the psychic words and psychic treatments, they know them. Okay,
well, so is this coming up? Have you got a court date or not?
Not yet. I have one more meeting with the lawyer. And
go to court, try to get resecure medications from the tea house.
Get the medication back, and I am actually suing them $5,000.
Well, we'll be going out to dinner together later, probably, on you.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to get a hold of Jane Kaiser, her number is 475-7904.
That's Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective. I'm going to have to cut this interview short because I am almost out of time. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go out on a few interviews I took the day of May 1st, the day there was massive support for the rights of Latinos, legal and illegal, and immigrants, legal and illegal. We'll play a little bit of that, and I want to thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrop's Beers Broadsides. I'm going to be coming back on Sunday, 9:30. And you can reach me off air at 423-HUFF, or you can go on the Huff to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, as a place to go. Taking one last quick look at the chat room to see if anybody has snuck in there. No, just me all alone in the chat room. But that doesn't matter. I'm glad you called in. I'm glad those of you listened in. And if I've been helpful, good. If I haven't, well, then you can maybe help out next time by helping me be more helpful. Here, let's go off on some interviews or out on some interviews, and I'll be back on Sunday at 9:30.
Musicians, perhaps, talking? Your name, sir?
Hi, David Bulthouse. How are you doing?
David, Robert Norris.
And Robert
Monty. David Monty, what brings you to this rally, and why are you here?
Where's
your guitar?
I should have my guitar and my drum, but I was looking on the internet, and I heard a lot about this immigrant legislation, and I actually looked it up on the internet, and I found a couple of things that were extremely disturbing.
You're pulling out a piece of paper here.
Well, I had to print down a couple. Because people don't actually believe that there's real live legislation that's this mean-spirited and this hurtful out there, but there really is. It's the House of Representatives, Bill number 4437, and there's two that really, really bother me. Actually, Section 1002, the construction of fencing and security improvements in the border area, all the way from the Pacific Ocean to the Gulf of Mexico. I don't want a Stalin-Berlin Wall on my southern border.
The Great Wall of China could become a very historic feature.
Yeah, historic for the hate that was behind it and the mean-spiritedness that it took to construct it, maybe, but...
What else have you know? I can get several other provisions.
Another one that makes it criminal, Section 205, where you have mandatory sentence ranges for persons who aid or assist aliens.
Arrest those priests.
Right, but there 415 people died in the deserts of California and Arizona and New Mexico. 415 in just 2005 alone. These are human beings. Now, to make it a criminal offense to literally give a dying human being a glass of water in the desert, to me, is beyond unconscionable.
Let me ask you this. Do you favor open borders?
There's always going to be borders. Whether I favor it or whether I don't favor it doesn't neglect the fact that they're going to be there.
Let me ask you, what changes in current immigration law? We know you oppose this law. What would you like to see? Do you have an alternative you want to suggest?
Oh, I certainly do. There are jobs up here. These people are not coming up here for no reason whatsoever. There are jobs. If you eat salads, if you eat fruits, the clothes you wear, these are all done by quote-unquote illegal aliens. People, you know, your day-to-day life is affected by these people, and in a very positive way.
There's a lot of it, though, happening, like jobs being farmed out to other countries, Thailand, the Philippines. So there's a lot of cheap labor. A lot of our stuff is coming from overseas, right?
Not your salads, not your fruit.
No, but our clothing.
Sure, your clothing, but yet there are illegal aliens making clothing today in the United States right now.
In New York City, and perhaps even in San Francisco.
Right. I live in Los Angeles, and they have huge places where illegal immigrants make clothing in Los Angeles. I've seen them.
Okay. So you're saying, then, what changes would you make to deal with... first of all, is there a problem of too many people coming in too fast? Is that a real problem?
Yes, it is a problem. There's definitely a problem. Overcrowding and all these things. But the thing is, you need some form of guest worker program. Some form of way where somebody who can get over here and fill a job that needs to get filled. I remember a study done about 10 years ago where they got a bunch of legal citizens to go out into the fields, pick strawberries, to pick lettuce for salads. And within 1 week, there was less than 40% of them left. After 1 week, over 60% of the people had given up and walked away from these jobs.
Well, let me ask you this, though. The United Farm Workers, for example, and many of us older folks, strongly opposed the Bracero program of the 60s, which did just that. And the modern equivalent would be Bush's guest labor program. Because what it does is they import labor people that then undercut the wages of working people here, even illegal immigrants who are working here. They can lower wages if they have more people. You just bring in 100 people, you break the unions, and you do it that way.
I'm a union member. I belong to the IOTC Local 728, affiliate of the AFL-CIO.
Right.
And it's just banding together. It's the unions. It's the people banding together and demanding a living wage.
Yeah, they're taking the street now as we look. It's about 1:20 down here, town clock. Folks are taking the intersection. It looks like They have taken the intersection.
Yes, they have.
We have taken the intersection.
And it's a beautiful sight. It's people banding together. This is nonviolent. This is peaceful. This is the people uniting together, brothers, sisters, children. These are people, and a lot of these are quote-unquote illegal aliens. I don't think any of these people here should be criminals. They look like my brothers. They look like my sisters here. And I really wish there was a way that we could decriminalize these people.
What laws would you think? Or do you have any legal changes? I keep asking this question. I don't have the answer. But nobody here that I've talked to has either. What changes in current immigration law? I've heard a lot of concerns that it's really, people, even though there's no criminal, even though aliens are not criminally illegal right now, there's a civil process which has resulted in massive deportation abuse, discrimination over the last 15 years or 20 years or so. What changes would you like to see in the current law? Or is that something that, are you prepared to talk about that?
Well, I am prepared to talk about it. And yeah, there are certain things. I don't believe fences. Fences have never solved anything. Having a huge fence closing off Mexico is not the solution. A guest worker program would be a good start, but a comprehensive one, something that takes into all the variables into consideration. And there is a way. There just needs
a guest worker program, even though, for example, the United Farm Workers very militantly opposed such a program because the only reason they could form a union was because they killed the guest worker program. I know this woman. I've seen her hanging around.
Well, it's a problem. It has to be analyzed. But this criminalizing people who assist people, traveling through the deserts is not the solution.
Everything's a lie about it.